why love will grow from the very first hello till the very last goodbye. Just one answer, you and I.
When you turned around and looked to my eyes, it was just a moment when I realized my life had just begun, and my past faded away. All I do is hope and pray that our love will always stay. Now the world is so alive, my dreams came true. You're the spirit that I need. It's all from you. Every moment that I live,
Please stand and join me with the flag salute. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Thank you. Councilmember Easton?
Here.
Councilmember Favre?
Here.
Councilmember Aceves?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Perotti?
Here.
Mayor Bennett?
Here.
Thank you.
Now is public forum, which is available for anyone to speak on any item that concerns the city of Goleta that is not on tonight's agenda. Have any speaker slips for that?
No, I do not.
Okay. And I see no one running to the podium, so we'll move on. Madam Clerk, A1.
Thank you. Item A1 is a workshop. It's on the Civic Center Feasibility Study for the Goleta Valley Community Center.
Thank you. Mr. Adamides.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. This is a important night in that the kickoff for the Civic Center Feasibility Study for the Goleta Valley Community Center really begins. This process began with the City Council last year in March during the Council's budget priority setting session, where the Council expressed an interest in conducting a feasibility study for a Civic Center at the Community Center. Since that time, at the end of last year in December, the Council awarded a contract to the consultant selected to perform the requisite work. This is the consultant, Rosling Nakamura Tirada, who is here tonight to conduct a presentation. Staff is excited about this process, not only because it's important for Old Town, but really it's a project of significance to the entire community and one that is a high priority for the council. Tonight is also the first of four workshops scheduled with the council. As you'll recall, in reviewing the scope of work, the City Council really expressed an interest and a high priority and emphasis on public outreach and the opportunity to interact and collaborate with the consultant team. Tonight is the beginning of that outreach and collaborative process. I also wanted to share with the council and for the members of the public who are watching at home that for those of you who are interested in the Civic Center Feasibility Project, we are offering email updates and notifications. People can subscribe through the Stay Connected button on the left side of the city's homepage on the website using the e-notices link at the top of www.cityofgoleta.org. With that, we would like to turn it over to Ms. Claudia Dato for further information on tonight's presentation. And again, staff is very pleased to be here today in response to the council's interest in really getting this project off the ground and moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Adamides. Good evening, Mayor and Council. We're very pleased tonight to have some key members of the consultant team with us. Leading the team off with the project manager here is Tyson Klein with Rosling Nakamura Tirada Architects, otherwise known as RNT. We have Catherine Young in the audience as an associate of RNT. Mr. Jay Sullivan, who's a facilities consultant and the former director of maintenance, operations, and transportation for the Goleta Union School District for about 15 years. So is intimately familiar with the community center site and facility, as well as the adjoining school district property. And Mr. Paul Sheehan from Dyer Sheehan Group. And I'll let those folks further introduce themselves. They're going to provide a little bit of background on the team and then go into an overview of the process and the following steps and where we go from here and upcoming meetings. Then there'll be a number of opportunities for not only council involvement, but community meetings to get the general public involved, interested parties involved, and a number of meetings, individual meetings with stakeholder groups. And we have a pretty broad outreach program to get as many people involved as we can, and we know it's a very important project for the city. So with that, I think I'll turn it over to Mr. Klein. He's got they've got a nice PowerPoint presentation.
Thank you, Claudia. Evening, Mayor, council members, thank you. I think I'd just like to start by saying how honored we are actually to be here, be involved in this project, be involved in the city of Goleta. So we're just quite humbled to just be involved in this project, I think I'd just like to say off the bat. And I also want to say that we're coming here tonight with some assumptions, but really is just kind of a format for discussion. There's a lot, this is a kickoff meeting. We don't have a lot of answers as this is a kickoff meeting, but we're hoping to have a format for a lot of questions on both sides. And I think what I'd just like to, if it's okay with you, since this is a workshop, that we make this extremely conversational. We're here to hear what your ideas are. We haven't formatted any ideas. We'll show you some ideas, some initial thoughts that we actually did as a part of our interview process, because we wanted to kind of get our minds around what this project could be. But I need to put asterisks next to that, those drawings, that diagram, you're going to see that it is just some kind of initial uneducated guesses, if you will. So with that, I'm hoping that we can somewhat follow this sort of agenda, and we'll get into the team members in a second, but I guess just as an overview, I'm also quite proud of the team we've been able to amass here. As I'm sure a couple of you probably already know, Mr. Jay Sullivan here. We've been working together for at least, seven or eight years on various projects, including Isla Vista Elementary that we did together a couple years back. Jay's helping us with Montecito, a master plan for, I'm sorry, not Montecito. Montecito, a master plan for Montecito Union School District and a couple other projects. He is invaluable, and he's even more invaluable on this project because he has history. So Paul Sheehan really brings our real estate knowledge, and which is going to be important on this project because we need to go out and assess those various properties and come back to you with some ideas about how best to leverage those. And we're going to let him talk about that in a little bit. Physically and figuratively, there is a series of other people that are behind me and landscape architect Susan Van Atta. We have a great cost estimating company that we work with that we haven't brought tonight, but there is a whole team behind us as well that is also working on this project while they're not here this evening. We kind of wanted to first just say why R&T, why us, why would we, be involved in this type of project. But we are a firm that works in civic, institutional, educational projects. We work on civic projects for various institutions throughout the state and the nation. We work with entities like national parks and state parks. And we really thrive on working with the public. Our projects are public-based. So that's why this project is quite interesting to us. And again, if you have questions, please, I'd love to field them as we move through this. These are some of our projects that we've done, including community centers in Oceanside and some rec centers and civic centers in NTC in the San Diego area. We just wanted to show you, our office is actually in Ventura. While we're not here in Goleta, we are a local firm, and just kind of a list of some of the, a list of some of the projects kind of in the general area, including Montecito, Santa Barbara, and kind of the Ventura County area. As I mentioned, we established in 1980. We work on civic institutional projects. I think we counted 20 civic center type projects that we've worked on in recent years. We work on elementary K through 12, higher education, community college work. We're doing a lot of community college work this way. And we also pride ourselves on really looking for unique sustainability strategies on all of our projects. So one of the key things we'd love to get discussion with you, maybe not tonight, but in our programming meeting later, is what are some of your goals in terms of sustainability? One of the kind of key components of this is going to be the project timeline and also just kind of understanding what is involved in this feasibility study. We've been scoped to do a feasibility study, and that's kind of a nebulous idea. A lot of people kind of don't quite understand what a feasibility study is. So what we were hoping to do is kind of take you through what that is, and so that not only you understand, but also we understand the community at large, as we've got a large population watching this on the TV tonight. So we're just kind of take you through that process. And if you see something you disagree with here, let's talk about that, and we can kind of massage the scope if need be, because this is kind of our first meeting with you. So if you see the typical kind of project, as you would know it, would be project initiation, starting of the project, and that happens today. And the final outcome, the ultimate outcome, is handing over the keys and you walking in that brand new building. Well, really, a project or a building is broken up into two parts. There is the design portion and the construction portion. And what I planned on doing is actually taking you through a backwards schedule here. So if you think of construction, the last day you get the keys to move in that building, there's a whole series of things that have to happen before we even get to there. One being the construction, and if you back up in your timeline from there, there's the bidding process that you have to go through to get the contractors to build that. And then the construction documents, the blueprint generation, those drawings that need to be generated to get to the bidding, to get to the construction. And then you move back in time into the design phase. And there's various things of design development, schematic design. And before that is actually conceptual design and pre-design. Conceptual design and pre-design is feasibility. So what we're really talking about here is the scope that's in this dark blue area. We're not talking about construction documents. We're not talking about full-blown building design, but we are talking about feasibility. Feasibility is working with the users, working with staff, working with council, and understanding what the needs are of this facility and understanding how that can best be facilitated. There's a unique opportunity on this project which has to do with the other properties and how they interplay together. So if you were to enlarge that feasibility study and look at the scope that has been laid out before us, that can kind of get broken into three pieces. The first being task one, and we're going to get into detail on this here in a second, and I apologize if I'm going fast, but I really want to kind of go through this, and if you've got questions, we want to make sure we have plenty enough time to answer your questions. We're going to, as task one, we're really going to understand the building, the site, all of the other sites, and what they have in terms of opportunities and constraints, what they have good going from and what they have bad going from, and that's task one. Task two is really to reach out to the community and to the stakeholders. We understand there is a large number of stakeholders involved in this project, and that's going to be an interesting endeavor. And we're up for the challenge. We've been involved in projects with varying stakeholders, of which most of them don't agree. So it's kind of our job to build consensus. And we kind of play psychologists at that point, and we try to, you know, find the common ground. Not everyone agrees, but we try to find common ground and build consensus, and that's what we're hoping to start tonight. Community outreach and programming. And just so you understand what programming is understanding all the bits and pieces of a project and size of rooms and adjacencies, and that's really important to us so that we can kind of lay down a good base for the building as it moves through the design process. And then finally, task three is the conceptual study, and we're gonna show you examples, physical examples of what that would look like. But that is understanding mass and scale and size and locations of all these pieces of, you know, the ideas that you've come up with and the community has come up with, and kind of laying that out in a diagrammatic fashion. You may not see beautiful renderings and elevations and color material sample boards in a feasibility study, but you, at the end of it, you should have an understanding of how big this thing should be and how much it should cost. And that's one of the key components of a feasibility study, is making sure. It's one thing for us to design. We can design you everything in the world, but if you can't pay for it, then it's not really a project. So we want to make sure we're designing, and we're designing with cost in mind. One of the other components of this is council touch points. We understand that you want to be involved. The council wants to be involved throughout the process. We're going to show you at the end, you know, some possibilities of dates for that. Right now, if you look at our scope, we have tonight's event is a council kickoff workshop. We have a council programming meeting down the road, and program document reviews. So once we develop the program, that comes back to you for your review and back check and make sure we got it right, and we revise that. And then at the conceptual level, you're folded back into that discussion as well. Another component of the outreach process is the community touch points, reaching out to the community. We understand that you have a myriad of community groups that need to be heard, that need to be folded in. And I would actually go as far as to say this is actually outside the users. We have the users, but this is the community component. And we're looking at four different opportunities. You'll see that there's two meetings for community outreach meetings, and then there's two for public workshop and a potential design charrette, which we're actually sitting with the community and designing with them. So feasibility study scope overview. So let's just talk about those three scope items in detail, and I'll let these guys talk because I tend to talk too much. Existing building analysis. As I mentioned earlier, and what we want to make sure you understand is what's the deliverable? What are you going to get out of this team? And some of the tools that we use are existing reports. There's a series of reports that we've kind of already received, existing drawings, site visits, code analysis. We're going to, as a result of that, we'll be generating land use studies and property value assessments. Jay, do you actually mind just maybe talking about, you know, what goes into kind of the assessment of a facility possibly?
Yeah. Sure.
Here.
I'll pass it over.
First of all, just a word about R&T. I just realized as I was thinking about it, my first involvement with them was 15 years ago when they began the design of Isla Vista Elementary School. And if you want to think about a diverse group of stakeholders, that's a good example. And at the time, there was a tremendous challenge to try and build consensus and put together a vision for the Isla Vista School. And I watched them at work firsthand and was extremely impressed with the firm in terms of how they managed to get people involved and build consensus. At that time, they were based in San Diego, and I was a little bit skeptical working with out-of-town architects. I have a bias towards local architects, but they really impressed me. And then recently, how many did you guys move up to Ventura?
8 years
ago when they moved to Ventura, I thought they made a really interesting choice. They relocated their firm on the avenue in down in Ventura, which I think makes a statement. And once again, they have a tremendous commitment to community, diversity, and the ability to put a wide range of stakeholders, often with conflicting needs and issues, together to build consensus. Having said that, they asked me to become involved in the project. I spent 15 years just to the left of the community center there. My office was on the site of the school district property. And during that 15 years, I was blessed to have just a great relationship with Randy Rossness and all of the group over at the community center. We worked together really closely also in the back of the site with the boys club group. We always had, I watched in one session where the community came together to begin to discuss what would be the potential use of the community center down the road, and that was a really interesting session that involved a lot of the senior groups and us over at the school district side, sharing what some of the, because we realized that there would come a time like this when the city would take ownership and we would need to move forward. That's just a little bit of background. And to talk about a facility assessment for me, one that I recently worked on with R&T was for Montecito Union School District, and that involves me basically crawling into every recess of the building to explore what the liabilities are and the potentials are for the existing facilities. I spent over 30 years in my involvement with facilities. I did 15 years at UCSB as senior plant superintendent in charge of the 55 tradesmen, and then picked up the 100 custodians as plant superintendent for that group. And prior to that, I was construction manager for the university. Then went to Goleta as director of maintenance operations and transportation, another 15 years of involvement with all of the Goleta schools. Was fortunate enough to work with a lot of talented people and spend about 10 years building out their $40 million bond. Throughout that process, facilities assessment was taking a hard look at every one of those 10 Goleta schools and making the right decisions in terms of how to best utilize the existing facilities and using a wide range of local talent, architects, and so on. What's the best build out of the facility? In some cases, the answer, for example, for Isla Vista School was tear it down and build something new. In the case of the other nine schools, it was maximizing what was there and building the facilities out so that they were ready for the for education in the next century. But having a broad background in the building trades, my family's been in construction for four generations. I take a hard look at buildings. I get inside the details and I relay that information to the architects so that I bring a sort of a note of realism to the process. This is what you have. This is what you're going to have to work with. There are problems with these facilities, their assets, but you're going to have to deal with the infrastructure, so on and so forth. That's the approach that I take, and that's what I share with the.
The great thing is Jay knows where that infrastructure is. He actually knows where the sewer lines are, which is kind of funny, which is always ends up being the problem is understanding where that infrastructure truly is, right? So maybe, Paul, if you could kind of chime in on the property assessment side of things, please.
Hi, I'm Paul Sheehan. I'm with Diner Sheehan Group from Ventura. We have been in business for the past 16 years, my business partner and I. We specialize in real estate consulting, usually revolving around real estate development, evaluation of major assets. We work for city and county governments, school districts, University of California, some of the largest private development firms and REITs in the country, and we have a lot of broad experience in evaluating properties, and beyond that, understanding the development process and how you get from a bare lot to the best use of a property. Personally, I'm an architect and a contractor by trade. I still do a bit of that, but we just spend a lot of time dealing with unusual real estate issues. What we have been brought in to do as part of this team is there's a number of properties that either are under consideration for disposal to generate funds or that may be acquired as part of this project. And we, number one, are going to look at all these properties and try to come up with preliminary assessments of actual value. Now, this is not just a matter of seeing what the property down the street sold for, especially since most of these properties are relatively unique. The Triangle site, which is just a big bare hunk of dirt, and the corporation yard, and the school district bus yard next to the community center. But what we will do in each one of these situations is we will go in and we will first understand physically what's there. And then we will dig into your zoning and your general plan and look at, number one, what could happen to this property, what are the time frames and the risks in that, and what might make sense on this property even that would require some kind of a zone change but might be compatible with the properties around it. We're looking for ideas about what the best long-term situation for this property is, And from that, and from the time frames involved, and even from a detailed understanding of the regulations that the city must follow in order to dispose of or acquire property, we can come up with values for these things, because it isn't, once again, just what the property sold down the street for. It's what can you do with it, how long will it take, where is the risk, and what process does the city have to follow that can impact the feasibility of that process. We will also get involved in some preliminary assessments in what it might take to move the bus yard to another location on behalf of the school district. We've worked on a similar situation with the Ventura School District. And we will be involved also as the concept comes together in looking at the overall development cost and just things that need to be taken into consideration at the preliminary level.
So that's kind of the task one, big overarching description there. But that's task one, which is existing building and site assessment. Task two is programming and community outreach. And to be honest, this is my favorite part. This is the fun stuff. And what we get involved with in task two in programming is we're actually meeting with the users. We're doing interviews. We're understanding what works in existing buildings and what could work better. What works and what doesn't work. We're meeting with communities, we're meeting with stakeholders, we're meeting with users, and we're generating a programming document. And at the end of a programming document, you'll have all these, I should use this, you have all these great diagrams that show adjacencies. You know, this office should be next to the bathroom and next to near the kitchen, but down the hall from these things. And we really kind of drill down. While you may not see a true floor plan, these are the documents that we use to test all those things, to test all those relationships. We also start to at the programming level, we start to engage the users and hopefully City Council about some of the other goals, some of the larger overarching goals about the neighborhood. This property has the potential to be a catalyst for the downtown. And what does that mean? And how does it affect circulation patterns? How does it affect not just vehicular circulation patterns, but pedestrian circulation patterns and open space and all the other things that fall into these types of projects? That comes out in this programming effort. And as I said, we're kind of looking forward to that. The community outreach is a process, but it's also a process to get people to the community outreach process. And that is something that we have some pretty good experience with, and I assume we will be working directly hand in hand with staff. There's various means of doing that. We've done posters, we've done kids competitions, coloring competitions, but really it's about getting the word out and getting people active. It's kind of funny how the community only tends to come out after there's a plan, right? The community only comes out after there's a drawing on a website. And ultimately, a lot of decisions have been made. So if we can get more people involved up front before that plan happens and build consensus among community, I think we get a much happier project at the end of it. Did you want to go through those items now? I noticed you guys had kind of brought up some opportunities.
Yeah, we have either we can answer questions from council, or we have a whole hit list of various tools that we use and that the public information officer uses to get the word out to Goleta citizens. There's all sorts of things we do actually on the city's website. We typically publish notices in the paper and mail those out both in. And I should preface this by saying that all the materials we produce are in English and Spanish. We use the Nextdoor social network, Goleta City Alert. You know, the city has a Facebook page. The PIO uses things that I don't even get on, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest, Google+, Flickr. Of course, do press releases. We now have the Monarch Press that's available electronically. And as Tyson said, you know, we envision using flyers and posters and, you know, getting those distributed in Old Town and you know, posted at the community center as well as key businesses in Old Town. And we have Channel 19 slides. We also do, particularly for outreach to the Spanish-speaking community, what we found to be really effective are public service announcements in Spanish on radio, Spanish-speaking radio stations like Radio Bronco. And then we, you know, we're already building an email distribution list, you know, for interested parties for the community center. So if anybody after the meeting wants to give me their email address, I'm certainly happy to take that. But you can also sign up, as Vito indicated, on the city's website. There's even an Old Town email distribution list, as well as one that's been set up for this particular project. So,
thank you. I guess I would kind of break the community outreach. I'm sorry, were you going to ask a question? I apologize. Please.
Just briefly, so far we've been talking about the community center, but the scope of work says City Hall or Civic Center. Shouldn't be City Hall and Civic Center? Are we going to talk about that?
Actually, we're assuming that it is. I mean, this is a civic center project, a feasibility for a civic center. So, and just to make sure that we're clear, that our scope is to look at relocating this function in this building to that site in conjunction with the community uses that are there now. That's our assumption of the scope. So, I hope that answers your question. That was our assumption.
Okay, because you're talking about space needs. Obviously, you have two divergent space needs when you talk about two different kind of entities, in a community center and then an office, city hall type center.
Absolutely, and that goes back to programming. You know, the adjacencies of some of those spaces will not work. So we need to figure those things out. Absolutely. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question is that I'm assuming the outreach list that you just said is quite extensive, but I'm wondering if you will also maybe connect with the general manager from the community center and look at their database, and maybe they have people on there that you might not have, and work with them. And then my second question, will you be holding any meetings other than at this site? Maybe would you have them at the community center in Old Town?
We envision the individual community meetings and the design shred, or, you know, other than the city council meetings, we envision all the community meetings to be at the community center. And we've already begun the process of, you know, probably the first person I noticed was Mr. Rob Block from the community center, and then he sent it out to, you know, the various contacts that he has. So we definitely want to try to get all the users involved. We also made direct contact with some of the bigger user groups, such as Community Action Commission and the Senior Center. So, yeah, we're trying to get everyone in the loop.
Thank you.
As you mentioned, the Goleta Union School District property that's just to the east of this property, it's almost 3 acres, and it would seem to me that it would be very hard for you to do this job adequately without knowing whether that was in or out. And we do have understanding, we have put feelers out there, if you will, that the school district, as long as they're made whole on this deal, that they are willing to move. But is that the type of thing that we need formalized before you could put pen to paper on this?
I think, again, this is a feasibility study. So we'll be offering up multiple scenarios, multiple options. One of them should include the property being included in the project. One of them should include the property being excluded. And I think in terms of – do you want to speak to that? In terms of assessing that and the process needing to go through to acquire that, so we need to do our homework to come back to you and explain what that would mean economically, as well as the process. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, and part of the real estate evaluation that is in the scope of work for this project is to look at that school district site, not only to try to assess a monetary value for the site, but to try to come up with some sense or scope of what it would take for the school district to relocate their functions and to make them whole. So at least looking at all this in terms of, gee, what would be a fair value for that property? And preliminarily, this is part of the scope. I think it's clearly anticipated that that's a real possibility. And until we get through that work, we really don't know how that's going to shake out.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. Is our staff is involved in this process of your evaluation about the expenses, the likelihood that we are going to acquire that? We're all knee-deep in this, I trust.
We've already reached out to the superintendent of the school district. I don't know if the city manager wants to add anything about potential negotiations, but we certainly intend to involve them in the process early on as one of the what we call stakeholder groups.
Yeah, and Mr. Banning, our superintendent, is here in the front row, so glad to have his participation. I don't know that I would describe it as knee-deep, because the more formal part, as you've noted, would be negotiations, and some of that will need to take place as we start to allow R&T to help us with some of the pieces of information that would help, I think, both parties in looking at this site, but probably not far off from getting knee-deep.
Before, I noticed the superintendent was here, is quite capable of speaking for himself, but I wanted to encourage early and broad and full communication with the school district, because I think that that piece is really important. So I was looking out for my old employer and their interests, but I'm happy to see that he's here.
You know, and let me just add this, and I know this is always annoying to staff when I do this, but when you look at this, do you have in your own mind some sort of a time frame on this? I mean, how aggressively are you going to approach some of the questions here, and is that something we have some input on?
Absolutely. In fact, we're going to show you a schedule here that brings us to you in a couple weeks with a council programming effort where we'd actually be engaging those types of questions within weeks. We won't have full answers, but we'll at least get direction from you. I don't assume we'll have a lot of direction tonight. This is kind of just getting the understanding of the process. But our hope is that the overarching assessment process goes quite fast, and we get, you know, questions beget questions, and we just need to close those loops for you. And that will be from a property processing standpoint as well as the economic standpoint, the dollars and cents, and moving those pieces around. I just want to kind of, if you don't mind, just kind of sum up the community outreach, because I don't know if I said it correctly. And the community outreach is really kind of two components. One is the meetings or the workshops where we go out and we just ask questions. We bring background information that allows people to give us their opinions and their ideas, and we're pretty much there with ears on and we're listening. The second component of that is what we tend to say call a design shred or a design workshop, where we are actually engaging the community as well as the council in design. And you can kind of get an idea about, you know, what that looks like, where we're actually sitting with users and community members, and we may be sitting over a little funny model and pushing blocks around and saying, does it work here? No, maybe it doesn't work here. That's the actual design effort. So there's kind of two parts. There's the question and answer and the database that we're generating, and then there's actually kind of the design component to that. So that's the community outreach part. Finally, the final task is the conceptual study, and this is where you're actually starting to see. This is after we've done our homework about what we could do with those properties, or at least the options that we could do with those various properties. And we've done the programming. We understand how big the City Hall component could be and where it can be and where the community groups go, and also how are the community groups not affected, or how are they minimally affected? Because if this property goes through a major redo, there is a there is a process of trying to limit their time out of their space, right? So Jay's done this multiple times with school districts where we have to phase construction and move people around. That's a big component because we have so many users in that building today. And while this is not your property, this is an example. I think this is Case School. Grant School. It's a K-8. But this is some of the graphics that we use to kind of help people understand where components could go. This is one of the things we'll fix, I promise. Vito, it's not working.
I've got one in my office. I'll get it for you.
Oh, it's okay. There. I'll try this one then. You can barely see this one. Well, I'll just talk through it. So all the various functions and uses and open spaces, and in this is a school, so obviously there's play spaces. So these aren't big, beautiful renderings that you're probably used to seeing in architectural finished product. But what these do is these explain and help us have conversations with the community as well as staff and council. I wanted to bring this to you because this is an example of a project that we're currently working with the City of Del Mar. And it's quite similar, I think, to what we may be dealing with here. And the City of Del Mar is a small city. It's a beach town. And it doesn't have a city hall either. It does own a very beautiful piece of property on Camino Del Mar, which is a prominent kind of downtown core type of street. But they're broke, too. All cities have no... Oh, thank you so much. Cities don't have money, and what we've done is we've actually worked we're looking at numerous developers and doing a public-private partnership, where a developer is brought in, and there's a partnership where the developer gets a piece or is incentivized to have some. In this case, it's commercial and some housing, and the developer is building the city hall for the city, and there's a public-private partnership. Again, we offered this up in our interview, so we're showing you this as an example. And I also want to show you this as an example because this is kind of the idea, or this is the way we would be talking about this project in maybe the design charrette, where we're showing very simple diagram site plans and very simple diagram building sections. And you can see, as I mentioned earlier, there's multiple scenarios in this project. There's not just one. There's multiple scenarios. One scenario, which is a net of $7.1 million to build the city hall for the City of Del Mar, where the developer's not involved, and various options where there actually is a net cost of zero to the city hall. So there's various scenarios that I think we would probably go through as well. And this is just kind of a good case study we wanted to bring before you. So I need to... what we wanted to do is we wanted, just for sake of starting the discussion, and I know you probably already have some ideas, and I know the community probably already has some ideas about what this project could be, what we wanted to kind of offer up is just our initial take. And please remember, it's completely uneducated. We've done our very limited amount of homework, but there is some basis behind it, and we'd love for you to tell us how wrong this is so we can then turn it and make it how right it is. There's a whole series of great opportunities that occur here, creating a true civic center in this downtown area is actually a really exciting endeavor. And I think we're probably most excited about how this could be a catalyst for the downtown. There's opportunities, I think we kind of already talked about this, connecting some of the circulation patterns and maybe even fixing some of those. But obviously there's a whole also list of constraints when you're dealing with an existing building. While this building's not on any historic registry, it is a historic building probably in the minds of the community. So it's understanding how much of that building should be kept. Should it all be kept? Should none of it be kept? Should a piece of it be kept? We've heard kind of variations of that, but we want to understand that better. So again, this is just kind of a baseline analysis so that kind of everyone's on the same page. And you know, understanding Hollister as the core that it is. It truly is a core that a corridor that feeds this great neighborhood, kind of a commercial neighborhood to the south, and a very, actually quite dense. I was really quite surprised how dense and compact that neighborhood is to the north. And the potential for this property to really engage that corridor and start something new there. We're assuming in this little endeavor, this little study, that the school property, it's a part of this idea. And I know that there's a big assumption, and I want you to know that this is our assumption, not the city's assumption. I know we have school district people in the property, so I wouldn't like anyone designing anything on my property, but we're just, this was just to get us the job, right? So we did this. we often like to bring, you know, at least some ideas to show you that we're thinking about this. So let's just, you know, suspend all reality for a second and just talk about what could be. And we know that there is this great building that sits along Hollister. We know that there's a fairly new Boys and Girls Club that's at the back. This is a little light. But we also know that there's some great connections vehicularly at the street. And we also know that there's this beautiful kind of green space at the front of this building that probably wants to be kept. But we don't know that. We think that right now, but we'll learn that. We'll learn if that's true later. And the potential for taking this... these connections and looking at circulation that right now, if you go to the site, it's somewhat of a hodgepodge in terms of you're really not understanding how you circulate through the property. And how can we define that better and make that very clear in terms of where cars and people and kids can play and all those various things. And the potential for maybe even connecting to future circulation patterns that are planned for the future to the south on the other side of the creek. As well as we've heard that there may be some want to connect to the west as well. And just what if, again, these are all what ifs, but what if there was a public-private partnership that stepped in and worked with this city and said, we're going to build you a new city hall that creates a true civic center, a civic building that sits on this street and has parking that sits behind the buildings. And actually the city hall fronts and moves up closer to the street. And we look at community serving functions that work within that, but respect this new circulation patterns almost like streets. Imagine this kind of being a new network of streets that defines where people and cars can go. And we define a good portion of this as potential open space. And again, this is just R&T Architects dreaming in a couple evenings on a Thursday night before a presentation. So please, you know, excuse us if we've got this wrong. But what it seemed to be is that there's somewhat of a lack of open space in this neighborhood, and maybe this property could take on some of that potentially. We understand, and this may be the worst thing we've done, Jay's probably going to yell at me, but there was an idea back in the day about even, what is it called, the Big Plunge?
Supposed to be over there with my office.
The Big Plunge, or a pool, or a community-serving pool, or something to that effect. And what if there was also a component that actually brought in senior housing, and that's the trade-off that the developer gets for building out the city hall. So, again, this is a huge what-if, and I know we've probably only got about 3% of this correct, but what we wanted to do is we wanted this to be a jumping-off point to at least start the discussion with you. I think probably the most important thing this evening is to talk about what's next. Where do we go? How do we get there from here? And we know tonight we've got this kickoff meeting with you, but what we'd love to do is talk to you and staff about possibly the second week of February coming back to the council and having a programming meeting. We're starting our work today. We have a lot of homework to do. We've got a lot of analysis to do. But what we'd love to do is come back to you and sit down and work through your wish list. We know we're going to be doing a similar effort, or we're hoping to do a similar effort in the middle or the end of February, possibly, with the community. So our first community meeting possibly at the end of February, but coming to you possibly in the middle of February. And I know that was a lot, and I apologize, and I'm a fast talker. So really what we are just here, we're just hoping that you can kind of give us some direction and let us know if we got any of that correct. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your presentation. Are there questions for the consultants or staff at this point? Otherwise, I'm going to go to public comment. We can listen to what the public would like to say.
If I might.
Go ahead.
One question. When I look at this thing, I wonder about the ingress egress to this piece of property. And there's a fairly major street and stoplight just to the east of the entrance and exit here. And I wonder, when you looked at this, is it within your purview to think about moving that to the west on the other side of the building rather than the side that it's on? I don't know that that's a feasible thing to do, but getting it away from the stoplight and that busy intersection might serve the interests of the people who will be using the Civic Center. And I didn't know whether that was something you were going to look at or not.
I think it should be. We won't have engineered drawings to fix it, but I think it should be under our purview. This study isn't just about the property itself. It's about the community. And if it means working with engineering and having an understanding about the traffic patterns there and talking with staff and educating ourselves about that and finding out, you know, if that's beneficial, I think it would be. I know that Claudia's already mentioned to us and showed us I'm sorry, what was the name of the new potential street to the south? I'm sorry?
Rutherford?
No, the new street. It was
Eckwill.
The potential for Eckwill and a potential connection there as well. So I think we're already thinking that way, and we would love those type of direction items, you know, and I think we should be looking at that type of stuff.
I'd like to add, and that's a really important discussion to have with the school district because the bus access is across the front of the community center. And they're going to have a strong need and to be involved in any discussions that would change that access up to the point where there was possibly a purchase of the property, because right now bus access to the school district property is problematic, so it's a concern for them also.
Councilmember Seves.
Is the study going to be consider some kind of future look as far as what our needs are going to be in 10, 20, 25 years? I mean, in this building here, we've expanded, I don't know, what, three times?
Yep.
And we're only 11 years old. So are we going to take that in consideration, not only for City Hall, but also for Civic Center? Because when you look at the one map, there is a good one. It's not all going to fit in that parcel. Yeah, you can take over the school district property. But, you know, with parking needs, and we've talked about parking off-site, but as land becomes available, mm-hmm. Is there going to be some kind of a strategic plan that allows us to take advantage to fill whatever what has been identified as needs in the future?
Councilmember Aceves and members of the council, included within the scope of work with the consultant R&T is an analysis of our building and space needs at City Hall currently and into the future, looking into a 20-year time period, looking into the future 20 years from now. So that would be a minimum projection into the future. A minimum would be 20 years.
And maybe I can tack on to that. When we get involved in civic projects like this, expansion is always a factor. Future phases are always a factor. So while there will ultimately come a day where there's a budget that allows you to build X amount, I think at a feasibility level, it's very easy to draw a new building right over here. It says, this is if we were to do something, this is where it would go. So I think the answer is yes. I think we should be looking at it. You should be looking at expansion plans over, you know, a long period. Absolutely.
Okay, if there's no further questions, I'm going to go ahead and go to public comment. First speaker this evening is Jill Walker, followed by Arlene Diaz.
Good evening, Mayor and council members. My name is Jill Walker, and I'm currently employed by the Goleta Union School District, and I work at the Maintenance, Operation, and Transportation Department. When I am here, I just thought I'd throw out some things to look at as you are looking to relocate us. One of the things that we need is access to a street, preferably one that has a signal light. We do have 40-foot buses that need to turn and have easy access onto a street, trucks with trailers. We do have fuel tankers that come and fuel our diesel and gasoline tanks. Our employees are constantly coming and going as morning bus routes and going to the sites. Some of our busiest times are the summertime when we have major projects, so I know you will be looking at relocating us. I was glad to hear that you had relocated a bus location, but we are maintenance and transportation.
Yeah.
And so I just am glad that you are taking those things into consideration. And our staff there will be more than welcome to work with you. We are that open and looking forward to working with you and the city as we did once before on another project. Thank you.
Thank you. Arlene Diaz, followed by Joyce Ellen Lipman.
Good evening. My name is Arlene Diaz, and I work for Santa Barbara County, and I work with vulnerable seniors. And my programs help. They actually take over the lives of seniors and when they are no longer able to help themselves. One of the reasons that that happens, that seniors lose the ability to be connected and take care of themselves, is when they lose their social connections. I can tell you that the senior center is invaluable, and certainly speakers more eloquent than I and that have more detailed information will speak on that. But my concern is that there would be an interruption in services, which would then necessitate my group coming in. So I would hope that in this whole process that there would be a big piece of if there was the decision to go forward, which I'm a little confused because I know that the senior center is and the community center is currently used and loved. So I'm sure there's reasons that I'm unaware of why this is going forward. But I would hope that you keep in mind where to put people in the interim. I mean, there's lots and lots of seniors as well as the other groups that use this area. And the loss of such a centrally located, easily accessible connection for seniors would be totally detrimental to Goleta and the outlying community. Thank you.
Thank you. Joyce Ellen Lipman, followed by Michael Lopez.
Good morning, Mayor and members of City Council. My name is Joyce Lipman, and I'm an employee of the Area Agency on Aging, which serves both Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. I did bring a copy of some information that I want to share with you, and I don't know who to give it to, but I will walk over there, I guess, and give it to somebody soon. I would like to talk about the value of the senior center that we have here in Goleta and ask you to consider addressing the issue of where senior center services will be provided during this development that you're proposing. Senior centers are an extremely valuable part of our communities. They are places people go to get help, to get information. People who go there are not only senior citizens, but caregivers and adult children of aging parents. It probably is many of us, if not all of us. And here in Goleta, you have one of the finest senior centers that I'm familiar with in the Central Coast area, and I'm actually familiar with all of them. The Goleta Senior Center is a designated focal point, and what that means is that you're The center is providing an extensive array of services for seniors, caregivers, and the community at large. This can include support services for caregivers, training professionals and students, development of innovative approaches to aging issues, nutrition services, fitness services, social networking. We all know the value of staying connected with our community, not being isolated, getting depressed, because, as you may know, seniors have the highest rate of suicide in this country and this community as well. So, you know, we're very concerned that seniors have a viable senior center, and you have an excellent one right now. Earlier this year, well, actually in 2013, we completed a needs assessment. We asked, and over 2,000 seniors responded, giving us the answers to some questions. 148 of them were from the Goleta community. And I want to just share with you that the top three needs that they identified for right now is understanding Medicare, meals and food, and finding friends and social activities. All of these services are currently available at the Goleta Senior Center. They also talked about nearly 50% of the seniors identified staying physically fit. And as you know, the center has many free fitness classes. And, of course, I mean, last year the development of that swim program with the local high school was just fabulous. I just, looking at the time, want to close by just saying, in light of all the accomplishments of the Goleta Senior Center has made in serving older adults, I hope that you will seriously consider how to make sure that there's no interruption of this very valuable service to seniors, caregivers, and adult children here in Goleta. Thank you.
Thank you. I would ask the audience, please, it just slows things down. And I recognize you like things that are said, but...
Wait till I'm done, then
yeah,
tell them.
You can go ahead.
what are you, nuts?
Mr. Lopez, feel free.
This is the first time I've ever seen you not in our alter ego outfits. Sorry, folks. I just realized that. Good evening. I'm Michael Lopez. I'm a training coordinator and organizer for Local 114, the Plumbers and Pipefitters Local in Santa Barbara County. We're kind of new on the block. We've only been here since 1902. I'm a 17th generation Santa Barbarian, and the last 18 years of my life before this job was working for a local Goleta plumbing company, Anderson Systems, fantastic company. One of the things that bothers me about projects like this is what doesn't get addressed usually in the front, I never get there on time, is the subject of local hire. And this is the buzzword along many politicians, and unfortunately it's almost impossible to put any legal teeth in it. There is one way, and it's been in existence forever. We're the best kept secret in everywhere, it seems like. I would encourage this board to consider a project labor agreement with this project. Best value is, I love hearing that in the front, because as anybody will know, when you actually bring properly trained people to a project, you will get a much better value for your, more bang for your buck. A PLA will also, it can be written up in with many, many details that will ensure that local hire. And the one thing that's absolutely critical is it supports the apprenticeship programs that exist. Another one of the greatest held secrets. We have most of our apprentices actually live in Goleta right now. Work for us is tough. If you think the unemployment rate for the community is high, you have no idea until you get into the building trades. So anything that can support local hire and putting our folks to work and support the ability for apprentices to continue in their chosen vocation and continue their education here in town, be a godsend. Another thing I would like you to consider, and it's a little way out in left field, is there's also funding opportunities through union labor life insurance outfits. So the fact that we're here on day one, I'd just like to make sure that we are Tri-County Building Trades, that the unions have an opportunity to be at the table and offer. This is what we do every single day. We build some of the most sophisticated properties in this community, and we do it really, really well. We do it on time, on budget, and we're supporting the community all the way along. So thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Mayor, may I ask a quick question? Mr. Lopez? The apprentice program.
Yes, sir.
I'm losing my voice. We've only been at this since 8:30 this morning.
Mm.
Is that high school, college, or how does that work?
Our apprenticeship program is it's a 5-year program. We're affiliated with Allen Hancock College. All of our instructors are state certified instructors. It's almost an alternative. You know, some students, I keep hearing that 40% of students that are in community colleges got no, or in colleges have no business being there. They're not getting degrees that are going to actually earn them a future, or they're simply not academically inclined. The trades are an awesome way to go for a student that's, and I laugh because I look back when I was in high school, I was told by a counselor that that's a great place to go for yourself when looking at your achievements or lack thereof in not being an academic. And I wasted 20 years of my life doing other. When I got into the building trades, I had an opportunity to get an education that was focused specifically on a trade that I was going. In our situation, and my apprenticeship program is very similar to the others, the IBEW and many of the other local that exist in this county, it's a 5-year program, and instead of costing a participant money, you actually are learning while you earn. You're put to work. Our program is a minimum of 1,500 hours per year on-the-job training, accompanied with a minimum of 216 hours of classroom training. What most educational systems in this community doesn't understand is they'll give you classroom training, but without that 1,500 to 2,000 hours of on-the-job training, it's not the same thing. So it is a combination, and the term apprentice gets bandied about and misused like crazy. If you talk to most folks, they believe it's the nephew of the guy next door who we're going to pay 5 to 10, 15%, you know, above minimum wage, and he's thrilled to be there. And there's no education process that goes with that. So we're very we're monitored by the state. It is a state-defined program, and it's monitored very heavily. You go on job sites. If you see a woman on a job site, I'll bet you my last 3 paychecks it's a union job site, because you're not going to see that kind of attention to allowing minority groups to be participatory, women being, you know, we welcome all. And we're looked at very, very carefully, and we like it that way, that level playing field. So, does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thank
cool.
you.
Thank you very much. Gene Blois, followed by Fran Foreman.
Good evening, Mayor Bennett and council members. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I have a long history with this building. Not only was it built in the same year I was born, which is 1927, but I unfortunately didn't go to school here. I was raised in Northern California, but my 5 sons all graduated from Goleta Valley Junior High and Dos Pueblos High School. And I was on the Goleta Union School District Board from 1970 to 1983. When unfortunately we had to close schools, and we closed the old Goleta Union School, which for many, many years, Jay can tell me when Isla Vista School was first built, it was the only elementary school in the district, and everybody went there. But it wasn't seismic safe, and so we closed it first. And shortly thereafter was one of our big earthquakes. Now, my mother lived through the 1906 earthquake, so I don't really monitor them all by name. But first thing I did was rush over 217 to see what happened to the old building, thinking, is the roof just slid off like I've heard? Nothing. But anyway, that's another story. I served on that the community center board. We worked closely with the county to enable us to keep that building going. And I dropped out of that, and I see Lanny Evenstein here, who was president of the community center board shortly after I left. And he, it's just a treasure. And I got back, after I was elected to city council, I got was fortunate to be the liaison with the community center. And at that time, we were actively trying to get it named a historical building, but we were advised it was just too politically complicated because for some reason they thought the county still should be involved and the city and the school district. So we had to abandon that idea. But to the community, it is the oldest building that people remember in Goleta, and which is a real challenge for you, a real challenge. And I'm not sure how you're going to do it, because I know, and we actively have talked with the school district at the time, and they said certainly they'd sell the property next door as long as we gave them a turnkey operation. And that's pretty hard to do in our small city, to find the properly zoned thing for a bus. So you do have your work cut out for you, but you've got to remember that that building itself is considered a treasure by many in the community, aside from the good work we're doing there now. Thank you.
Thank you. Fran Foreman, followed by Lanny Ebenstein.
Good evening. My name is Fran Foreman, and I'm the Executive Director of the Community Action Commission of Santa Barbara County. We're a large nonprofit organization that's countywide. We have 400 employees at 30 sites throughout the county, but we're headquartered here in Goleta, and have a very large part of our operation at the Goleta Valley Community Center. So this is, I'm a stakeholder, and I'm sure that we'll be meeting, and I'm sure that you'll be learning more about our needs. I had heard mentioned many times K-12, but where about preschool, and where about early care and education, and that's licensed spaces, as are our partners, Rainbow School, that's also there. It's very technical in nature. It's not about what we want and what we don't want. There's many rules and regulations that govern us, including very strict rules from Head Start, and we also are proud to say that we are accredited by the National Association for the Education of Young Children, which is the highest level of quality in early care and education in the nation. It's like the Good Housekeeping seal. And it has many requirements also involved. So we're talking about square footage, indoor and outdoor space, separating younger children from older children outdoors, bathrooms. And I want to say that Community Action Commission has invested a great deal of money, which we don't have now, so let me say that very clearly, in making those spaces the way they are right now. So I wanted to say that because that funding was available to us, and now that funding is not available to us. So I concur with the comments made about the senior center, and we're also really supporters of the senior center. We provide the food there and know the work that Amy Mallett is doing and the importance for the seniors. So I think it is going to be, I think it's a very exciting project. I'm also a resident of Goleta, so it's wonderful to see this kind of development in Goleta. But I do think it's going to be very, very difficult. We'll work with you on making sure that services continue, because we right now service 80 very low-income families who live and work for the most part in Old Town. Many work right on that street. They drop their kids off. They go to work across the street. They come back. So we're with you, but it's going to be difficult. Thank you.
Thank you. Lanny Ebenstein, followed up by our last speaker, Barbara Massey.
Mayor Bennett, members of the council, it's a pleasure to address you this evening on the Goleta Valley Community Center. I became a member of the board of directors of the Goleta Valley Community Center in February 1980. I was president of the board in 1981 and 82, and treasurer in 1983 when the agreement to sell the community center from the school district to the county of Santa Barbara at that time was negotiated. Jean Blois didn't mention that she was on that school board that negotiated that transaction, and it was a great tribute to the community that that she and the other members of the Goleta board voted for that to occur. I'm very supportive of the proposal to attempt to create a city hall and civic center at the Goleta Valley Community Center, and I hope to be in further contact both with the council and other civic organizations on these issues. But tonight, I just wanted to say that this really is a complicated project in terms of it's no small deal trying to find 3.5 acres for a new transportation and M&O facility for the Goleta Union School District. The challenge of that should not be underestimated, and that's a multi-year project. And the reason why that land wasn't originally sold in 1983 as part of the agreement was it was just too complicated at that point in time to figure it out, and I'm not sure if the facts on the ground have changed too much. The second issue is that it seems to me that what's absolutely vital to retain the integrity of is the entire original old Goleta Union School of the 8 classrooms where the senior center is located and other programs along those lines. And I don't think there's any reason to change that essential part of the site one iota in terms of and I think that the conversation will move forward will move in a stronger positive direction when we say that the essential essence of the community center is going to stay the way it is, and whatever new facilities there are going to be elsewhere on the site. And again, the speakers you've already heard from the senior center, it's been a strong part of the Goleta area for decades at this point in time. And then finally, the significant child care services for preschoolers in particular that are offered on both a private and a public basis on the site are something that have to be considered in any equation. I'll just say in closing that I think that it'll be good to involve other government agencies, in particular the Goleta Union School District, but others as well in your deliberations and so forth as this process goes forward. Good luck with it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Barbara Massey.
Good evening. I'm going to be different than the other people. As you know, I tend to be sometimes.
Can't hear you, Barbara.
Oh, that's unusual. I said I'm going to be slightly different in my opinion than most people. There seems to be a predetermined choice of Old Town Community Center as our future location for City Hall and the Civic Center. I don't remember ever having been asked whether that was what I preferred, but we'll move on. You should know that there are those citizens who do not view Old Town as a location for our Civic Center. We would like a location more centrally located within Goleta, with better access and room for adequate parking, one that will be large enough to accommodate future expansion. Many think that the triangular parcel you have next to City Hall would be a far better location for Civic Center. I hope that the feasibility study will fairly review the property in Old Town and consider other sites. Thank you.
Thank you. That's our last speaker, unless someone hasn't turned in a speaker slip. So I'll return it back to council and staff. Any comments? Any thoughts? Councilmember Easton.
I'll just do a little bit of qualifying myself. I have been on the board of the community center, and by education I'm an architect and licensed. One of the things that I think I have a lot of support from the audience today is that yes, the old school building is essential. And I think the possibility, it's been maintained by volunteers for a long time. It shows it, unfortunately. But I think to redo the inside, not in terms of changing the classrooms where 2,500 people that still live in Goleta, where they went to school, but to renew the inside so that it can serve the multiple purposes that have been talked about tonight and will be talked about endlessly probably before you're done. To renew the inside and keep the outside and then use that as the keystone for the other things that have to come. I don't think Old Town's kind of funny. We that live there, and you have pictures of my house up on the screen every now and then. But those of us that live there kind of like the fact that it's funky. And when someone wanted to take a U-shaped modern building out, the community said, no, we like that stinky little thing. So I think you have a lot of opportunity to be creative with what gets done and how it gets done, as long as you don't mess with the stuff that's important to many, many people who have lived there and gone to school there and worked there and still like it.
Councilmember Perotti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I think you guys have your work cut out for you. I learned a lot of new things this evening, so I think it's critical that you do work with all the stakeholders that are in that building to be able to accommodate them. I must say that I sit on the as the city's representative, and I sit on the board of the Goleta Valley Community Center, and so I'm there quite often, and I see firsthand the incredible programs that are being offered, and I agree that it would be a shame to disrupt that and displace them. You know, I think pretty much we all agree that we don't want to see that. So good luck.
Councilmember Sotos.
Thank you. You know, this is just a feasibility study of what we can use for the most efficient use for that property. We all treasure it. I mean, the facade, even though it was a school building, it looks like a city hall. And I would hope that after you talk to everyone with all the touch points, that we come up with a very grandiose plan. And when I say grandiose is because we want to ask for the world and bring it down to what we can afford, knowing that in the future, in the next 20 years, here's our strategic plan for the property, making it a civic center, make it a city hall. You know, but we can do that and make it financially beneficial if people remember that in this building we're paying $600,000 a year. Okay, and it's time we stop paying rent, put money into our property. We can have a good city hall and we can have a great civic center, but it's going to require outside the box thinking. It's going to require making sure that we look at not only different designs, but what are our needs? What are the community needs? And make sure it's built in. I agree with Councilman Easton trying to keep some of the historic perspectives. Maybe that can be built into it. I certainly want to make sure you keep the facade. That needs to stay. Because that would be just absolutely, talk about all the kids that went to school there. To replace that, we're going to hear about it. So, you know, I'm excited. I think this is a start for a definite long road. But like anything else, the more information you get and the more opportunities that are presented makes the decision even better. So those are my comments.
Thank you. Anything further from staff?
Mr. Mayor and Council, one of the most important aspects of this feasibility study in reviewing the scope of work, the historical and cultural significance of the community center building itself, the hub of activity that it is, that it represents in the community, one of the most important aspects of this entire project is about the people, is about the opportunity to work collaboratively with members of the community, with the users of the community center, identifying what the city's needs are now and into the future, and trying to ensure that these things are looked at in a cohesive manner, that they fit together. And certainly we've communicated that to the consultant team. We've heard it from members of the community. We've certainly heard it from members of the council. And we're excited about embarking on this process with the council, with the community. This will be somewhat of an involved process involving people to provide us feedback. And we want to reach out to as many people as we can to ensure that we're hearing what needs to be heard as we report back to the council. The timeline for this project is roughly 4 to 6 months. We'll be certainly providing updates on the city's website and certainly through some of the workshops that you'll see here. So staff just wanted to communicate that to the council tonight.
Thank you. Any further comments from council? I'd just like to wrap up by saying, as you can tell, we have a diverse community. We have a lot of interests and people that are concerned. But as you can also see, we're very open-minded, and we want to protect that which we have, which we think is very unique and wonderful for our community, and then also meet those additional needs that have been expressed this evening, and also by council expressing the interest in the construction of a new city hall in relationship to what we're doing here and paying rent. So we want to thank you very much for your presentation. I want to thank everyone here who came to listen, and for those of you that had a presentation. And I would just ask everyone to please keep an open mind, because there's been no decisions made. The only decision being made, which we made a few months ago, is to go forward with the feasibility study. So that's the process. You've learned about the outreach that's going to be taking place, the stakeholders that are going to be interviewed and continue to be spoken with. And this is a totally deliberative process involving all of you. So you can be as active as you wish to be. And I would encourage all of you to do so. Tell your friends, if they're not here and they have an interest, they should participate. So that concludes our meeting this evening. And once again, thank you for coming.